Full of Sound and Fury is a podcast for adults, by adults, and contains adult language. Listener discretion is advised. Previously on Full of Sound and Fury.
11 yards, shy of the record. Williams breaks a hole. Williams had a record book. Ricky Williams runs to the Hall of Fame. Touchback. Ricky Williams, touchdown!
All right, we're going.
Testing, testing.
Okay, it's picking up. Cool.
Cool.
Okay. All right, I'm going to start this as provocatively as possible. It makes for better radio. Is the Matt Brown era past expiration date?
I'm sorry to say it again.
Oh, balls. I didn't pick up or anything. Is Matt Brown's... Is he done?
He's not done coaching at Texas. You've seen his last top 10 season at Texas.
Yeah. It's the recruiting, right? It's not just me. It looks like the teams are not as good as they used to be.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing because it is the recruiting, but it's not the recruiting. The current team's recruiting is not in a state where the coaches didn't get whom they wanted. They got almost every player they wanted out of high school. So
Okay. It
comes down to the decision-making process of who they selected.
Talent evaluation,
and then also coaching them up when they got here to Texas. You know, because you can have...
The whole using your arms thing when you tackle, you mean?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Right? We have... And playing the right players. I mean, there are inexplicable things happening. No. Here's a stat that'll blow your mind.
I don't think it will, but lay it on me.
DJ Monroe has 100 carries in his career at Texas. He averages over 7 yards a carry.
Okay.
Against Oklahoma last year and this year, he had 3 touches. Does that make any sense in 2 outs?
Well, if the goal is to lose by the middle of the second quarter, I understand the strategy.
No, absolutely. I'm just saying, here we have a player
who
all the talk about how limited he is, he can only run certain plays, blah, 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 blah. He still averages 7 yards a touch.
Yeah.
And then we have a 5 or 6 game stretch here where we're struggling, where he's not averaging a touch a game. And on senior night, he got no touches.
And he's like a 7th-year senior, according to my back-of-the-envelope calculation.
So
he started before we did.
We're talking about a player who actually has a chance to play in the NFL.
Yeah.
Who's not getting any touches. And this makes no sense. I mean, it's not like the offense is on such fire that, you know, we're fighting to get the ball to all kinds of players that are succeeding.
Right.
You know, Bergeron looked good at times last year against some weak defenses, but he's really averaging like 3 yards a touch this year.
Yeah.
So
the last game I watched a lot of was actually Texas OU.
Yep.
And by a lot of, I mean about 5 consecutive possessions. Once I realized we were getting beat on both sides of the ball in the trenches, I was like, oh, this is done already. Okay.
Yeah, this is a terrible game. I mean, the team this year has had all kinds of problems. That's, of all the games, I'd say that was our second worst performance, the worst performance being the win against Kansas.
I missed that suck fest.
It's terrible, but...
Am I right in thinking that
it really depends on which Texas team shows up, blah, 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 for the next game. And I'm like, I haven't seen a good Texas team this year. So we're just talking about...
Yeah. It's probably worth mentioning at this point that we're recording this the night before the Kansas State shellacking that I'm sure is about to come our way.
Sure. We match up terribly against Kansas State of all the teams on the schedule.
Yeah. Well, they have a football team for starters. That bodes badly.
We're trying to make a Heisman campaign for another Big 12 quarterback.
Yeah.
So we have to let him have his shining moment. It's going to be bad.
As long as we're screwing the Aggies, that's all I care about.
Yes.
they seem pretty committed to screwing themselves on that, though, until just recently when they realized that freshman tradition was like, you know what, we're about to not win the Heisman because we won't let this guy out of his cage to speak to people.
Yeah, the Heisman... Of course, it's his own crazy its own crazy race where the
I'm scared. I'm going to throw that out there.
It's more from the quarterback on an undefeated team to some kind of YouTube highlight reel slash one or two big games in the second half of the season for a candidate who wasn't a preseason candidate. Because it's almost as if people are looking for a flawless winner when these don't really exist. If you go back and look
at... Not right now, they don't.
Well, they never did, though. I mean, because it used to be that, you know, there were like 12 games on a Saturday. So when, you know, Danny Werfel played a bad game at Florida, no one really saw it. I mean, all you had to do was have a couple of big games, lead your team undefeated. You could have a popgun arm like Werfel, but they were undefeated and he got it anyway.
So you're blaming social media.
Yeah. Johnny Football had a terrible game against Florida.
Yeah. Well, in September, to be fair.
Yeah. And a terrible game against LSU. But in neither of these games was he a candidate. If he had been a candidate at that time, the voters never would have jumped back on board. But he only became a candidate kind of before the Alabama game with his stats. But stats per game in conference, he's actually not doing very well.
Yeah.
But lots of YouTube highlights.
Now, how much of that is the fact that that conference is the SEC?
I think that the SEC is undergoing a change here, and I think you're going to see it in the next round of hirings. I think there's a couple of interesting things. The SEC's played no one non-conference of any legitimate value. ESPN's cycle of hyping them up because they're paired with as television partners is a big thing with the rankings. And I think when you look at the 2009 national title game where Colt got hurt, where we were shellacking them early with the
I remember.
Then how well A&M has done when they were a 6-6 Big 12 team last year with an NFL Miami starting quarterback, to then this year in the spread, how well they've looked. It looks like Tennessee's number one choice at this point with Gruden turning them down is Gundy at Oklahoma State.
Is that
State.
Jay or John? I hadn't heard about that.
John Gruden.
John Gruden, okay.
They went after him hard, and Gruden actually listened to the pitch.
Yeah.
But then they came out, I think, just this morning and announced from both sides that they looked at it. He was interested, but he was going to turn them down. He's making like $4 million a year to just announce.
And badly, I might add.
Yeah. Tennessee is a good program, but they're probably in like a top 10 to 15 program.
Yeah, yeah.
So if he's going to come back to college coaching coaching at all, it's probably not going to be for a Tennessee job.
But he's coming here, in other words, you mean?
I don't think Texas would take him, but I don't think it'd be a bad idea if we did.
Yeah.
I think we're probably stuck with Mac for at least another year or two. He almost seems outraged at the thought that the boosters have turned against him.
He was as pissed as I've ever seen a couple weeks ago in that press conference.
Yeah, I mean,
it was like seeing Santa Claus mad.
He looks really tired after TCU, but then the next week here, he's kind of been angry. Definitely some of the boosters have turned on him. There's about 206 guys for Texas that are...
This is the Texas Super PAC you're talking about?
So there's six guys that control, let's say, like 20% of the votes. And then there's like 200 guys that control like 70% of the votes.
Okay.
And 10% of the votes is just like a billion people or
that's
something.
Your one percenters.
Right, exactly. So this 206 people are really influential money guys and guys that he's really surprised that are against him. I mean, they are actually actively trying to band together to push him out at this point. But there won't be enough power. Powers, the president, and Dodds, both of them are in probably their final 2 years at Texas.
Oh, I hadn't.
Neither one of them really wants to go through a coaching search. And so they're behind Mac. Enough pressure will really be applied for him to get pushed out. And so we're really looking at another bad year next year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. No. How bad did Garrett Gilbert not being any good screw us? It feels like that's when everything kind of went to shit.
Well, the 2009 recruiting class, not that there haven't been other bad decisions, because there have been, but the 2009 recruiting class is actually hilariously bad. You, me, and a three-year-old could have thrown darts and done better.
Is this the one where they were trumpeting, oh, hey, we got Case, hey, we got Jackson, we've got these two little brothers?
So this is the Garrett Gilbert class.
Oh, okay.
The only, so we signed, I want to say we signed 23 kids that year.
Okay.
And the only guys we got out of it, this is the senior class, by the way. Okafor, who's had a monster season, though nobody notices because we suck so bad.
Yeah.
Akaro, those are the two good guys. Mason Walters, who was supposed to be a left tackle, but has just been a guard. And he's been so-so as a starter. He's never really panned out to the hype. And then Chris Whately, who was supposed to be the running back, and he's kind of a part-time defensive tackle. That's where the list ends.
Okay.
Those are your only four contributors out of 20-some kids that we signed that year. And that's just pathetic. I mean,
when you say contributor, you mean starter or
the shit? No. Whately's just in the rotation. So three starters and one guy in the rotation, and then no one else.
That is bad.
I mean, not a bench player, not a special teams player. Those are the only four guys. Everyone else is either transferred, got kicked off the team, quit, injuries, or just plain sucked.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, that you can't have a senior class that's that thin. And really, we've been paying for that class for a couple of years now. But
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Some of the classes behind it, you know, like the 2008, 2007, 2006, we had problems. But, I mean, that class is just terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, I heard in the locker room at the gym the other day two things that broke my heart, and you'll probably know if this is true or not. Apparently, both RG3 and Manziel were looking to play here.
No, absolutely true. So, RG3, we recruited him as an athlete. We weren't sure what we wanted him to play, wideout, defensive back, or quarterback. We hadn't ruled out quarterback, but we didn't offer him a scholarship, but it was close. If he had, you know, shown that he was probably closer to committing and wanting it better, he probably would have got a spot.
Yeah.
Johnny Football, one person on the staff.
I can't believe you called him that.
Yeah, I'll call him Johnny Football. Football's easier to say than his last name.
Mangina, I don't know.
It's some hurt in my heart that just kind of brings it to light.
Okay. It's a coping mechanism.
The staff obviously disagrees on evaluations anytime you have, you know, seven guys looking tape, they see different things. Akina was a giant fan of his and wanted us to offer his quarterback. And they said no. He believed it so much that he wanted to offer as a defensive back and get him on
campus. Just to get him on the field, huh?
Get him on campus.
Wow.
And so we did offer him as defensive back, mostly because Akina thought he was such an athletic talent that he could play defensive back if we got him on campus and he couldn't, like, kind of prove that he could be a quarterback. Now, that being said, lots and lots of teams passed on him, including Houston. So Sumlin and Cliff Kingsbury evaluated him at Houston and did not offer him a scholarship.
Okay.
So they happened to have him at A&M, but they also passed on him.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting thing where lots of teams did pass
on him. What's the knock on him? Is it the size?
No, he's had troubles with partying and been in trouble with the law in high school and at A&M.
Oh, okay.
So it was kind of an attitude problem that caused us to pass as a quarterback.
Okay.
So I think he's been arrested now four times, three times in high school and one time in college, all minor. But I say all minor in that, like, we're not talking
no one died.
Felony or assault or anything. I think we're talking about, like, a couple of, I think it's drinking twice in high school and then, like, a loitering charge or something. And then the one in college here that was before this season in the summer, had to do with him being at, like, he was with a teammate. The teammate had yelled a racial slur, and then they got in a fight with some people. But he didn't yell the slur. He didn't instigate it, but he was at the fight. I mean, it's not a giant deal, but it was enough to turn Mac off, you know, in his mold what a quarterback should be. But like I said, lots of other teams pass based on talent as well. It's always the package.
Yeah.
You know, if these three, if Vince Young had some minor arrests in high school, you know we would have taken him.
One would hope. I still remember that ridiculous high school film session you and Judd showed me back in the day.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous.
That guy could have showed up covered in dead babies. I think he gets offered a scholarship.
Yeah, I mean, everywhere. I mean, it's totally random how we enforce what we choose to enforce. There's in the 2014 class, so they're juniors in high school now. Okay. There's a defensive end in San Antonio that we have committed who's quite a good talent. But he got suspended from his high school team for, I want to say, 3 games, and I think it was a minor in possession charge. We're choosing to ignore it and honor the commitment. I mean, it all just depends on how talented it is, what kind of relationship the coaches have, you know, what they decide to do.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a balance.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's interesting times because the thing that Mac has always had is he's been able to choose who he wanted. The 2014 class is off to just a disaster of a start. A&M is such a hot commodity right now. It's sickening.
Yeah, they got the QB, so.
they're really recruiting well.
Well, you know, like you said, ESPN and SEC, rather, in bed together.
Yeah. Well, and, I mean,
you got the eyeballs.
He's got a good personality. He's recruiting lights out. He's got something to sell. They're on upswing. They had a good season. And not only did they have a good season, but they have a centerpiece who's young. So you could sell these guys on them being good for multiple years because, you know, kids can't believe that anything could go wrong. It's simple, right? I mean, even I don't necessarily think anything's going to go wrong. SEC defenses are built to stop the run, not to stop the spread attack.
Nope. Is anyone built to stop the spread attack thus far that I can...
Any defense, you're saying?
Yeah. Or is that going to be the next innovation to get someone hired?
I'd say Florida. Florida probably has the best defense this year.
Oh, God.
Notre Dame's defense actually did fairly well. I would call Oklahoma a spread team.
As far as defending it, you mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, they've got guys that are... I mean, you can attack the spread in multiple ways, right? Like, what Notre Dame's defense is doing is a couple of things, or how they defended Oklahoma and how they're defending everyone, is that they're playing almost exclusively man-to-man coverage. They've got some young corners, but they're just saying, hey, just stick with the guy in front of you. Let's make this simple. And then their front seven is really good as a group.
Right.
They got the defensive end. They got Teau that are both maybe standout NFL players, but the other five guys are much above average. And so between the seven of them, they can bring some simple blitzes but still effective and get pressure on a quarterback. I mean, you know, defending the spread is not rocket science, but you have to have a well-coached team, you have to be fundamentally sound, and you have to have athletes.
Yeah.
And it's harder and harder for lots and lots of teams to have good defenses because recruiting – so I've been following recruiting pretty closely now for about 15 years. And I would say there's
– I can vouch for that.
Yeah. But I would say there's much more balance now, almost like college basketball, than there was even 10 years ago, where the top teams used to get whomever they wanted. Well, now that's no longer true because you have players that could be, you know, both a wide receiver or a defensive back.
Let me stop you there for a second. What changed there?
I would say exposure to information. Just the whole internet age has given kids information. So, you know, now they can look at the depth chart. They can look and, I mean, way more games are on TV. So, like, they're exposed to more. And so it used to be, you know, like this thing where a month or two before signing day, you know, coaches came into the living room and showed them some pamphlets, and then they picked Texas or Notre Dame or Ohio State. But, I mean, Texas has been fighting with kids with Baylor's offensive system. And this has been going on for 4 or 5 years now, where
Baylor feels like our biggest quality win this year. In all seriousness,
yeah, that's probably true.
Because that's not a bad team. They still got a lot of talent, and it feels like a big deal that we beat them.
The best team we quote beat was Oklahoma State, but we fumbled the ball at the very end, and so it's kind of an interesting victory.
Yeah,
because I think from the replay. I think it's hard to tell whether it's overturnable or not.
Right.
I think we actually did fumble the ball, and we should have lost the game.
That was my remembering as well. I do remember Ash, was it 4th and 10 or 3rd and 10 he stuck to set him up for that not touchdown?
Yes. Third and 10.
That was the best throw I think that dude's ever made. Yeah. I don't want to talk about his bad throws. There have been a lot.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing. We're starting to see a little bit of quarterback debate again on message boards, but there really is no real debate on, we only have one quarterback. It's not Case. It's Ash. He's limited. He's never going to be an All-American quarterback. I guess in the TCU game, this was especially bad. Apparently, he hurt his ribs at some point in like the first quarter and then didn't tell anybody, and then they didn't realize until the fourth quarter, and he sucked the entire game. I've seen some people praising him for like his toughness, but this is just really stupid. If you can't throw the ball and you don't tell him, you're not helping your team. Like, okay. But,
you gotta self-report, man. Yeah. Otherwise, Colin Kaepernick can't take your job.
I'm like, he's our guy moving forward. That's not exactly like, wow, I'm excited that he could get hurt and suck the entire game and not tell later at some point. Yeah, that was great.
Heroically injuring himself in the line of duty.
Yeah, it doesn't help anyone.
Nope. I don't know. Maybe I'm being a crotchety old dude, but that fucking haircut of his also just pisses me off. not based on anything, but it drives me nuts.
I see it, and I'm reminded of that guy Sunshine from Remember the Titans.
Oh, God. Like he's not that good. Sunshine could throw. I mean, at least on TV.
But at the high school level.
Right.
We don't know if Sunshine could read defenses or not.
We could probably look it up.
Yeah.
I guarantee you he's on Wikipedia.
I'm sure.
So is there anything good going to happen here in the next 2 years?
Give
me something, man. I'm on the ledge. Notre Dame is good, A&M is good, and Texas is bad.
So if Mack Brown got enough pressure here to resign at the end of the year, we'd be sitting in a fairly good position because there's enough talent on the team that if we brought in a new good coach, there'd be plenty to work with. But every year we pass from here, this gets to be less true.
Yeah.
If Mack comes back next year, there's actually several key freshmen that are considering transferring. And these aren't freshmen that are buried on
good news.
This is opposite of good news. But it is what it is. I mean, the top freshman wide receiver and the second good running back, they're both very possibly out.
I can't blame them.
Neither one of them redshirted, so they can redshirt, go to a program, go somewhere else, and then have 3 years to play. I don't think it's a bad decision either. If Max stays around, he may stay around 2 years, and then they're in trouble.
Is there an heir apparent, or are we going to have to go look for somebody?
We're going to have to look for somebody.
Yeah.
Lots of names out there, of course. I don't think anyone has a real good idea who would actually be chosen. There's obviously good choices out there. We are Texas. It is we are the top moneymaker. So, they're out before us.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. But, yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it all just comes down to when he'll decide to step out. Now, if he comes back next year, which I think he will, it's possible that after another bad year, there would be enough pressure brought to bear to force him out. But that's an ever-evolving landscape, so it's hard to say what would happen.
Yeah. And meanwhile, we lose our recruiting class as a result.
Well, yeah, because the 2014 class is already pretty lost. We have some good commitments. We have 5 kids. Now, this being said, we'd have to hold them, you know, for a year and 3 months still, so 15 months out till they sign. But we have a good quarterback, offensive tackle, fullback, running back, and wide receiver committed. So 5 guys, all on the offensive side. But that being said, it doesn't look like a Texas quality class. They definitely lose some key players that have already pledged to A&M, or that are down to like A&M and LSU, and we're already on the outside looking in. Even if we hired a new coach tomorrow, it'd be very hard to get in on those guys.
Yeah. But
the 2015 class would be a fresh slate. So. What can be done?
Yeah. What's the state of the Big 12? Or the big whatever the hell it is now? 9, 7, 11 and a half?
Everyone's waiting to see what's happening with the ACC here. If even really if one more domino falls here for the football schools, the ACC looks like it's going to become an actual basketball conference only. And that's going to leave some teams looking to find a home.
Right.
You know, that being Florida State, Clemson, Georgia Tech, Miami. You know, these teams would be looking to move. The Big 12 is completely reactive. It looks like the SEC and the Big 10 are really driving this expansion. The Big 12 is not driving this expansion. Texas, and maybe it is because DeLoss Dodds is in his final years, but they're way behind the curve. They're not driving anything. So our conference may not actually survive. It may. I would lean toward thinking it will.
You think it will?
Yep, I do. I think it survives, and the reason it survives is we got lucky in that this Champions Bowl was created where the non-BCS team from the SEC and the non-BCS team from the Big 12 will play every year. Starting next year, when that's the best two teams that aren't in the four-team playoff, that's quite a high-profile game. So landing that alliance between the two conferences probably saves the Big 12, even though they've totally screwed up realignment. But I'm guessing at this point, actually, that they're going to luck out and get Clemson and Florida State through realignment. I think the ACC is going to go basketball only and get Clemson and Florida State because they don't have anywhere else to go. Both those teams want to go to the SEC, but the SEC won't take them because there's an alliance of teams that's very real. South Carolina, Florida, and... forgetting Texas A&M now, and then one more team. Oh, Georgia. Those four teams are all voting no to Georgia Tech, Florida State, Clemson, and Virginia Tech. I'm trying to remember the other team. But they don't want any of them in the conference.
Why not?
All their counterparts in state. They don't want to. They want to be able to be in the good conference and not have their rival in the conference. So they're kind of doing they're doing a block vote no. So at this point, Texas can't even go to the SEC if they wanted to, because Texas A&M is part of the block vote now.
Right.
So Georgia Tech and Florida State and Clemson actually can't get into the SEC even though they want to. So they have to go somewhere else. And because of this, the Big 12 really becomes the easiest geographical conference. By us taking West Virginia, we really kind of moved that way. Their only choices are Big Ten or Big 12.
It looks like
Georgia Tech may go Big Ten, interestingly. It'll be the only school kind of on an island like West Virginia, but
yeah.
Big Ten has lots of good academic institutions, and Georgia Tech fits along with that mold. So we may get Florida State and Clemson by default, which point would that be a giant coup for the Big 12? I mean,
yeah.
You have a program like Florida State, and you become much more legitimate.
Those are both respectable programs. Clemson's underrated, I think.
Yeah. I mean, Clemson is not a top 15 job, but a top 30 job.
Yeah.
And they're committed to baseball, basketball, and football. Basically, their athletic program. In a women's lacrosse or something, but, you know.
That's the rest of the Big Four.
Yes. Yeah. It's a decent program. That has
girls with sticks. That's actually quite terrifying. No, I'm serious. A woman who can run with a large 2x4.
No, I saw this video online. It's off topic, but it was two girls with like an egg beater blender, you know, like the two little metal things, and they're like putting it on their arm and putting it on their foot, and they're laughing at each other. And then one of them puts it in her hair. She screams and hurts herself. I'm like, oh my god. Like, what the fuck?
What? I don't understand. Why did she do this?
Well, they were just putting it on different parts of their body and seeing how it would feel and laughing about it. And so she thought it'd be a good idea to put the mixer in her hair. Girls and technology.
Okay. Well, it's an option.
Yes.
Not the first one or even the seventh one I would have chosen, but hey.
Yeah.
It's what the internet is for, to record human stupidity.
Yep, absolutely.
Oh. So the Big 12 survives with
yep.
Florida schools. That's interesting.
Yeah, just the one Florida and Clemson. I mean, we'd really like Georgia Tech because it gets us into Atlanta. And they're a good academic
institution. Hang on a second. Let's back up. Explain that comment to me.
Would you like to get into Atlanta?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever been, anyone's ever said, man, I'm raring to get into Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, absolutely. Recruiting the South in general would be important between here and Florida. South sure. Carolina is not really that much of a hotbed for talent. Georgia is. And so to have games close to recruits' homes in Georgia would be big for the teams.
That's interesting.
And so we're really talking, and also Atlanta is a big television market, bigger than Clemson in South Carolina.
That's fair. Well, the Florida high schools were good. Is that not true?
The TV and the recruiting grounds, they'd probably rather have Georgia Tech. But it's splitting hairs enough that, I mean, they'll really take whomever they have to take to get Florida State. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Florida is better recruiting, and they're a national brand.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I mean, whomever you have to take. I think Florida State would actually lean toward Clemson, so that may be the choice, because they kind of have a natural rivalry there between, like, the Bowden days. It's kind of semi-built up where they still care about each other. I mean, they're not, like, arch rivals, but it's at least someone's familiar on the schedule.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily see the Big 12 going to 16 teams. I think they're going to stay small. I think the SEC and the Big 1G / Big 10 are both going to be at 16 teams here within 2 years. They're just picking which teams they want at this point.
You think Pac-12 is maxed out?
Pac-12 has a problem in that no one wants to go west. Well, because what you do is, when we just talked about why the SEC is ranked so highly is because they're on ESPN all the time.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The Pac-10 teams are not on any news network because everyone's asleep by the time they play half their games. So.
Well, that's true, but I always like the fact that they're later. It's something to do in the evening.
Absolutely, but.
But I guess I'm alone in that.
It's all about percentages, right? Like how many people are watching? And how many people on the East Coast are watching where most of the media is. Teams get followed, but let's...
But LA let's is still the second biggest television market, right?
Okay. Yes. USC is its own thing.
Okay.
Right? Like, USC is a national brand, top five job. I mean, you can recruit nationally. It's a cool school to be at. Even when Kiffin is there, they get everything they want. That was like the litmus test. I think that USC brass said themselves, how can we test whether or not it matters, whether or not we hire as a coach to see if they can...
Got it. Recruit. Douchebag coach. Make it happen.
Let's hire Kiffin. He was born on third base, and he acts like he just hit a triple. He's like, oh, my dad's a famous Monty Kiffin, so I'm a coach. Yeah, complete douchebag. And they still get whomever they want. Now,
well, the best part is he's going to have to fire his dad. You've heard this right.
This morning.
What was that say again?
The dad resigned this morning to save...
Oh, no shit. Wow, breaking news.
Yeah. They were going to push him out as the coach overall. He tried to keep his dad. So
yeah, I heard that. So I know Lane Kiffin well enough to know what that decision was going to be.
Which would have been interesting because the number one target... for USC was going to be Mr. Texas A&M.
This is where I have to admit, I don't know who that is.
Kevin Sumlin, the A&M coach.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's right.
That was USC's number one target. So it was going to be very interesting to see if the Aggies could hold him away from USC or not. 99% of Aggies thought they could hold him. I think 3% of them were grounded in reality.
That's Aggie math right there. 99 plus 3, coming up with 100. So I can't fault your math at all. And that it's broken as shit.
I'm like, I think you might lose him to USC, even though you decided it's not.
You know it's 76 there every day. And yeah. Covered in attractive women.
Yeah, beautiful women just wanting to, lining up to suck his toes.
Oh, my God. Oh. Well, that made me feel better. That they're still dumb as shit. I'm gonna hang my hat on that. That's all I have left at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing. I've had, of course, countless Aggies give me crap this year, and I'm like, wow, we didn't even play. Like, yes, your program had a good year, but you finished fifth in your conference. If I had gloated this much for the last 15 years, like, my mouth would be dry every day.
Well, we don't often gloat about finishing fifth in our conference, which I think we will also do.
Yes.
We're still brothers, you know.
It's a different standard. I mean, that being said, I mean, they did have a giant turnaround, and things couldn't...
Oh, yeah. No question.
Things couldn't be going better for them compared to what, you know, the expectations were at the beginning of the year. But, yeah, it's pretty hard.
I know they want us. They're hoping like hell that they'll get us in the Cotton Bowl.
Yeah, they're not going to the Cotton Bowl, actually. A&M's getting selected to the Capital One Bowl in Florida.
Really? Who are they going to play, you think?
Michigan, probably. So another A&M win blowout game.
God, ain't that the truth?
Yeah. Like,
I remember watching that Michigan-Alabama game from early in the year. I was like, wow, this is...
Michigan's secondary is not good. Dernard Robinson is still broken. I mean, Michigan's going to get steamrolled. I mean, that'd be my guess at it. The Capital One Bowl is choosing A&M over the loser of the SEC title game because Manziel's
the man.
The Heisman, people tune in and watch the game. A&M fans are going to travel like gangbusters because they're so excited. I mean, bowl games are not about pitting the best two teams you can pick.
Money.
The bowl game. I mean, make money for your bowl game. And A&M is a better choice than Alabama with another loss or Georgia with another loss.
Bama doesn't lose the championship game, right?
You know, I don't know. In the SEC, I think Florida is the best team. They have the best resume. I think Alabama wins, but I don't think it's a shoe-in at all.
I'm struggling to remember, but I watched Florida play someone a few weeks ago, and it felt like a quality win.
Well, Florida has several quality wins, actually. Yeah. The interesting thing is that Georgia's only played two games.
Precisely, which is why I'm not sold on them.
Yeah, and they lost to South Carolina 35-7.
Yeah.
They got pasted. They beat Florida in a tight game, but they were +3 in turnovers. So their big win is they beat Florida head-to-head, and then they basically played no one else.
Yeah.
And Florida really beat themselves that game, which, I mean, is still a loss, but okay. And Alabama's quality wins are pretty weak as well. I mean, they've got an LSU win and a Texas A&M loss, and then they beat Michigan. That's their resume. So
LSU's not the team it was a year ago, too. That's for damn sure. I haven't watched that game.
No, yeah, they have a good running game still, and then pieces of their defense are good, but I mean, they still don't have the winning formula. They've got lots of good athletes, but their team is struggling almost in the way Texas is, but they just have a little bit of attitude at least, a little bit of edge and toughness.
And they use their arms to tackle things.
They do use their arms to tackle. Their tackling is better, but I would say their offensive philosophy is Greg Davis bad. I mean...
That's damning.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. They've gone through multiple offensive coordinators here over the last 8 years, and apparently they just have no idea how to pick one that has any kind of, you know, strategy, cohesive strategy of how to attack defenses with their offensive players. It just seems to be completely random, with some fake field goals thrown in. That's their 8-year period.
Oh, the Jets offense.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay, see, that's all you had to tell me. You talked around that for a minute.
Yeah.
This is the Rex Ryan offense.
Is it Rex Ryan every offseason?
Speak loudly and carry a big sandwich. All right, got it.
Yeah, yeah. There's just not much going on there. They've got a really good strength and conditioning program, and they've got a lot of good athletes and speed, but who knows what they're doing.
Okay. So if you're telling me the SEC championship game is going to be competitive, potentially.
That's the point where Georgia has no resume, so it's hard to know what they'll do. I mean,
well, I forget what ESPN pundit was saying this on the radio just the other day, but he was pointing out that Georgia's quarterback, his rating is terrible against teams that are any good.
Oh yeah, no,
so
absolutely.
It's like, well, I know Bama's got a defense. That much I know.
Yeah, it's tough because the ESPN pundit sample size is like two games.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They don't get to watch extra games than we do. It's true.
Yeah. I mean, there's only the two games to choose from, and the quarterback's rating is not good. But against every other SEC opponent, they've got like three running backs, and they really haven't even had to pass the ball. They've just chosen not to. But it's interesting because Georgia actually has. I know Tao is up for the Heisman on defense, and I think he probably loses. But the defensive player that no one knows his name, who should actually be the Heisman candidate, his name is Jarvis Jones, and he's an outside linebacker for Georgia. Mm-hmm. This kid is like DeMarcus Ware reborn, just on a good college team. I mean, he's just a monster. Off the edge, wreaking havoc, killing people, complete game changer in that you can't even run your game plan without knowing exactly where he is, and they move him around all the time. I mean, he's an NFL stud playing in college right now. And, you know, Georgia has that going for them. So Alabama's offense is not exactly great either.
Oh, no.
And I'm wondering what Alabama's offense is going to look like with this kid just tearing them. Because he's going to. So it's like, which defense can create turnovers that lead to direct points, you know, like short field 20 yards and under, or just like a pick six fumble return for touchdown kind of idea, or which defense can actually just kill the other guy's quarterback? Because while both quarterbacks are bad, their backups are worse.
All right, so let me ask the question of dread. I think this is like the third question of dread I've asked, but I've worked myself up to it.
Okay.
Does Notre Dame win this thing?
I think that they're an underdog to either SEC team.
Okay.
And so...
All right, okay. I got that going for me. Okay.
Yeah, whichever SEC team wins, I think, has a better chance of winning than Notre Dame. Notre Dame's offense is not good. They have less weapons than either of those teams. And their defense is good, but, yeah, I'd give the edge to the SEC there, but... It's probably, honestly, like a 60-40 game either way. So, I mean, 40% is a good chance of winning. You know, it's not like there's no chance.
Right. Are any of Brian Kelly's recruits playing there yet?
No, not really.
Okay. So yeah. That also bodes badly moving forward.
It's an interesting thing when a coach like... Kelly or Stoops come in early and has success in year two. Stoops won his national title in year two, by the way.
Oh, I remember. I remember vividly. Let's be fair, Brown was that guy too here.
Yeah, Brown looked good early, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he won a national title that early, but yeah, I mean, he turned around quickly.
Yeah. They produced the Heisman like his first year.
First year, absolutely. Yeah, his first recruiting job was retaining Ricky Williams.
Yeah, no shit.
But so it's, you know, Bob Stoops got this, you know, big game Bob kind of thing going without any of his recruits. And then, you know, then he stopped getting like lunch pail guys because they started recruiting better. And then his team has kind of lost its own identity. I wouldn't consider Oklahoma to be a tough team, even though they kill us every year. They get punched
in the... No, they're a hype team. This is a team that looks really good till the games matter, and then they shit in the bowl.
Yeah. And or just some big team along the way punches them in the mouth, like Notre Dame, and then they fold. It's the kind of recruit that he seems to get.
I always felt like Sam Bradford was a great quarterback for them. Like, his entire personality and physique was indicative of their program. You looked at him funny, he got hurt. Oh, God.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be interesting, on a side note, to watch Oklahoma like over the next couple of years, because that next quarterback, that Bell kid, he's tough as shit.
Oh,
like, I don't know why they recruited him other than he's really good, but he kind of breaks the mold there. And it'll be interesting to see whether you know, the leader of the team's personality, because I wouldn't say Stoops is not a tough guy. If the one leader in the locker room, you know, this happened with Texas and Vince Young, right? I mean, Vince had all this swagger about him, mm-hmm. and really changed the culture around the program for a couple of years, where all the guys were coming to these off-season voluntary workouts yeah. that weren't before. I mean, one guy really can change your team. So it'll be interesting to see how Bell does, because this guy is tough. I mean, he's like probably the one college player that, you know, in a year or two could have like a t-shirt take it off contest with Tim Tebow for a calendar shoot. I mean, this guy's just ripped. So we'll see. It'll be interesting. I mean, I don't like them, but he's a tough, tough kid.
Okay, well, none of this bodes well, so I'm gonna switch topics here before yep. I let you go. You heard about the whole Spurs thing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, $250,000 fine.
Yeah, that is shit. I'm gonna throw that out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting
Why
thing.
Why don't you find Miami for only winning by 4 points? You had your guys there, you sons of bitches. You didn't show up either.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we have all kinds of stars that only show up for 30 games a year, like with effort.
These guys just actually went home.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, obviously, I'm in the camp that believes that really you run your team however you want if you're not tanking. Period. I mean, and then my second question is, when people show up in Miami to watch the games, are they there to see LeBron? Or are they there to see the Spurs players that they probably can't even name?
Right.
I mean, yeah, these guys are Hall of Famers, but I'd guess that most Miami fans can't even name them. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Actually, you know, you look at the outcome of the game, and Popovich has to be able to say to his guys, look, we didn't even have our best four players. Like, as a bench, you guys can hold your own. And oh, yeah. This is important in the playoffs. I mean, you have to have stretches where you can rest your guys.
Popovich is the best coach in basketball, no question. And it's not even close to him. I don't know who the hell number two is, but it's not even close.
D'Antonio.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
But
no, I love it, though. Fuck L.A.
You've got older guys in the Spurs, and, you know, Duncan is playing lights out this year. His statistics are amazingly efficient compared to the last couple of years. But he can only give you so many minutes a game.
Right.
I mean, that even comes playoff time.
He's 37 now, do I have that right?
37, yeah, I think so. Yeah. And so you have got to get your bench ready for important minutes in the playoffs. I mean, this is what the Spurs do. They draft and build their guys in their organization. And you don't create good players from the bench just by practicing them. You get them good and develop them by playing them in meaningful games. And the Spurs have been doing this for a decade or longer. I mean, this is why players like Parker and Ginobili are actually good. They didn't just magically appear. I mean, San Antonio built these players, developed them themselves.
Yeah.
You know, all he did was the Spurs had a 5-game road trip.
Oh, I know.
In 7 nights. It just happened to, I mean, it actually makes a lot of competitive sense to rest your nucleus all at once.
Oh, yeah, he's totally did the right thing. I don't understand how you even, like, level that fine with a straight face given all the shit that went on around it.
Yeah, well, you know, he did
cite something else.
It says for the, you know, the best interest of the league, if you sit your players and it's not in the best interest, then you're allowed to be fined. It's within the rule. It's just a bitchy thing. If this was New York or L.A., he never would have fined them. He kind of has a hate relationship with San Antonio for being as successful as they've been over the years. And
it's such a small market. How dare you?
I mean, it's bad ratings. I mean, Stern is much more about Stern has always thought that you grow the league through the big market teams being good, not by having a competitive balance in the league. Some sense of like things being run well. He only wants the perception of things being fair.
Yeah. No, yep. It's definitely the MLB model over the NFL. Which is a shame. I really... Now that the Mavericks are finally good, like they weren't in my childhood, I've really gotten into the NBA. And it feels like there's a better product than what they're offering there.
Oh, absolutely. The interesting thing is that all he has to look at, you know, to kind of debunk his theory is, look how many Oklahoma City fans there are.
Oh, yeah.
But not in Oklahoma. I'm talking about in L.A., in New York, in Milwaukee, in Kansas, in Oregon. You know, I go home to Oregon and I see Durant jerseys. Oklahoma City Durant jerseys.
And you go to Seattle and you see people just weeping.
Yeah, absolutely. people in Portland as well, because they drafted Odin in front of him.
Oh, God. I forgot. So
the whole Northwest. That out. The whole Northwest cries. That's the rain for the next 10 years.
Where's Glasnevs anyway? Someone picked him up. Is that San Antonio? Do I have that right?
You know, I don't think I saw that. I finally did see where Portland waved him back. I don't think he ever plays again.
Yeah. I mean, I swore I saw something about him being a reserve now on a named team. I can't remember who it was.
It's possible, but I don't think he'd be even practicing this year.
Yeah.
I think that the surgery has him out. So I think it's possible someone picked up his contract, but I don't think he's practicing with anyone. Hmm. But, I mean, it doesn't hurt to pick up a really small contract just for the what if. He'll probably never play, though.
Well, he never had played. He's been steady that way.
Yeah.
he was done before he started, poor guy.
I can't remember. Is it true, or am I just imagining that something like the most games he's played in a season is like 30?
I would take the under into that number.
I think it's like 31 or 32 games that he played in one of his first five seasons.
No, you know what it is? It's 32 over five seasons. That's what it
is. There's one season he played 30-some games.
31. You're thinking of 31 scoops at Baskin-Robbins. That's where you're getting that number.
31 seconds.
He doesn't play basketball. He plays... He's related to basketball.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Hilarious internet thing is that A&M... not on purpose, but as they're, you know, recruiting just going crazy after this Halloween. I don't know if you saw any of this, but Johnny Manziel had a pretty wild Halloween on A&M's campus. And people are taking pictures of him out in public with just these gorgeous girls wearing almost nothing. And, of course, it's just all over the internet. And, of course, this is just great for them. They couldn't have any more positive press. It's like, here, look. Come to A&M, be good at football, and have, you know, 12 dozen hot women fighting over you.
I'm glad there's finally a campus like that. It feels like I think the country's ready for a campus where a football quarterback who's done very well out of the gate gets a lot of attractive co-eds.
Yeah, there's a few that way.
Yeah. No, A&M's the first.
Yeah. But... A&M hasn't been thought of this way for quite a while.
Ever.
Yeah.
Let's be fair.
When they were last good at football, they didn't have many girls in school.
Well, that's also true. Oh, that's a scary place.
Yeah, it is. You know, Texas will be fine. Texas needs to make the right hire coming out of all this mess. And things would get turned around fairly quickly because between the two cities, I mean, Texas just has a lot of built-in advantages that A&M doesn't have.
Right.
How long it takes us to turn around is how long do we have to deal with the broken system that's in place now? Because that's where we're at. Right. And then number two is how good a hire do we make? Because I don't necessarily know that I trust the guys that are there to make the right hire. Mack Brown will get some input, and I think his input's probably pretty negative because he'll be trying to hire a guy like himself, which isn't what we need coming out of his own tenure. It's not that you couldn't hire someone like Mack like 20 years from now, but when something is broken, if you hire something that looks too much like it,
yeah,
a lot of negative press immediately. Because no system is perfect. No person is perfect at their job. So if you bring in someone that has the same weaknesses as the guy before them, that's bad.
If it's new, it needs to look new.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, you don't want to just, throw Matt Brown's shirt on some other dude.
My pick now, since this is being recorded, and I don't think that we're probably smart enough to hire him, but I think the next giant coach, if you look, 6, 7, 8 years from now, and you're like, man, I wish we had hired this guy, I think it's going to be James Franklin. He's the coach at Vanderbilt right now.
Interesting.
One knows his name, but Vanderbilt is a terrible football program. You know this, right?
Oh, yeah.
He's gotten 2 top 25 classes to go to Vanderbilt back-to-back. And he's got Vanderbilt with 8 wins this year. That's sick. Vanderbilt. Freaking Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
And he's only 40 years old, and he's African-American, and he's hilariously sharp. I love him. He's so candid with the press about his team's performance and just, like, what he looks for. You may have saw an article like last year, everyone actually threw a fit about him because he was quoted as saying he'll only hire assistant coaches who have hot wives. Because
unassailably sensible. Why would this be a controversy?
His rationale is that if you don't have the confidence to go pick up a hot wife, you don't have the confidence to convince a top recruit to come to Vanderbilt.
You can't get a woman. How are you going to get an 18-year-old boy? Sounds bad.
Well, because, his rationale is that a hot woman has all kinds of guys after her, right? So you got to have a good sales pitch and got to be, like, good at convincing people and have good confidence and just personable skills to land that hot wife. And, these top recruits have 50 schools after them. Well, it's way a hot girl has 50 guys after her. So he wants a guy that's actually landed a hot wife. No one else need apply.
So is there like a place for their picture on the resume when he's hiring, or how does this work?
Apparently, he just like uses Facebook and Google, and then he just doesn't even interview the ones with ugly wives.
Oh, at last, a purpose for Facebook.
Like, he just Google Facebooks them and then just sees what they look like.
It took 6 years, but someone finally found a productive use for Facebook. College recruiting.
We
based on wife hotness.
In my job, though, we do this where we look at when people apply for a job, we look at their Facebook page.
I think that's pretty standard now.
There was a gal not too long ago that applied for a job, not in my group, but a group that's next to us that we work with. And she didn't even mark all her photos private, but it was public. They were like her in like a bikini top taking shots of Jack and stuff. People were morons.
So you hired her?
No. I would have hired her.
She's got moxie.
Yeah. Well, I think she's technologically challenged. She probably doesn't even know what her privacy settings are.
To be fair, that's most of the world.
Yes, well, but we
privacy,
are.
Privacy, what?
We're an engineering company, so you can rule that person out. Any other questions to make your heart sad?
I don't think my heart could take it anymore.
Yeah.
We got a Notre Dame title on the horizon.
40%.
A&M is good.
A&M is good. And A&M is probably here to stay for a few years.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
because
the one thing they've got me, I mean, is he a hot NFL prospect?
Who?
Johnny Football.
No.
He doesn't have the right skill set, I'd imagine.
He's too short. I mean, he's really only like 5'11".
Yeah.
He's got a couple of problems. I would be surprised if he went, because he's not an early prospect. He'd have to stay there 4 years.
I'd be surprised. See, that's what I was hoping. Maybe he just leave it for two.
No, he can't leave it up two.
But he did, I mean, what limited games film I've seen him, he doesn't look like an NFL guy, so.
No. But I'd also be surprised if he doesn't pick up an injury, even a major one along the way here. He's small. I mean, he's going to get hit the way he plays. And he can't play a different way because that's what makes him him. I mean, you can't be like, hey, man, stay in the pocket or throw it away or slide. I mean, that's going to make him completely ineffective. I mean, that's what he's good at.
He's got to man up and be like David Ash for himself.
Right.
And continue to play badly.
But it'll be interesting. Yeah, I think that...
Oh, man.
And you've got to give a lot of credit there to the system and not necessarily just to him. I mean, the system is working quite well. I think that the SEC kind of really underestimated what the spread could do. They faced spread teams before.
Yeah, Grantland actually had a whole article on that thing.
Yeah, I mean, they've faced spread teams before, but always only for bowl games. Right. And you have a bowl game matchup, you have like a whole month to prepare. And it always seems like even the best spread teams are a little bit kind of out of rhythm for a bowl game because they haven't played anyone for a while. Like an Oregon. Oregon always seems to kind of underperform in their bowl game compared to how they did in the season. Because it's like their offense isn't quite clicking. Tech always has this problem too. It's actually kind of one of the main things I'd look at if I was deciding what type of offense to implement. Because that timing between the wide receivers and the quarterback is so important, it's hard to have it after
such... timing between plays, too. Tempo is a big part of that thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so these things are kind of off come bowl game. So when you're talking about when your team is good enough in a BCS game or a national championship game, it's a liability at that point. Like, it may help you to get there, but it's a liability when you do get there. Hmm. Goodness, we even saw this. I mean, think about the Oregon versus Auburn national title game where we got Cam Newton against Oregon's offense, and they're both completely out of sync. They're both running the spread.
And I didn't actually see that game.
Everyone was expecting.
I remember Oregon versus LSU in the Cowboys Classic two years ago.
Same kind of problem. Like, the spread has problems early in the year and in the bowl game, both. Like, you have these big out-of-conference games early, and your team isn't quite clicked and dialed in with one another yet. Yeah, if I was a spread team, I would never play a team like LSU early. This is bad scheduling.
I love how that's just part of college football. Picking when you're going to have a big game.
Play nobody like Georgia.
It's so indicative how broken the whole damn system is.
Yeah, I mean, a good step next year to go to the four teams. The interesting thing is that the end goal is not to go to four teams. This is almost... a known interim step of saying, hey, let's get a playoff, even though it'll only be four teams for the first couple of years. It'll be easier to sell it as that. But they're moving to eight teams here within the next 3 or 4 years. And, of course, an eight-team playoff is going to be awesome.
So you're excited for it. That was the question I actually wanted to end with, so...
Yeah. Oh, I'd be absolutely. I mean, yeah. If I was in charge, an 8 or 12 team playoff would be exactly what I would want.
Yeah, that's cool.
It's enough teams where you're not leaving anyone out in the cold that deserves a shot, and it's small enough that the regular season still matters. You know, I would love to see if it's an 8-team playoff where the first round is at the top 4 seeds' home stadiums. This way, if you had, like, think back to, like, when we were playing Oklahoma, like, and we were, like, number 1 and 4 or whatever, the games like Oklahoma, Texas, or Florida, Florida State, or Ohio State, Michigan would still matter because only one of them is going to host that first-round game. Both of them are never going to host a game. So those games then matter. If you had a playoff and the first top 4 teams got a bye, that would also be awesome. I really wouldn't care as long as those top couple of teams are really rewarded. And then the other thing is, just like the NFL, like by having several rounds of playoffs, then when you finally do get to the championship game, these teams haven't had a giant layoff. So they don't come off, you know, a 55 days of not playing a game, which is ridiculous. Of course they're going to be rusty, but if they're only coming off of a bye week and they played 14 days ago, you're going to have a better game.
Yeah, I've always said that the college game, most of the time, the game, it's barely a game. It feels like a preseason game, but yep. Every so often, when when there is a good game, they tend to be epically good. Like, a lot of my favorite games I've ever seen ever are collegiate games.
Yeah, there's definitely the, what do you want to say, the warts to the game, the imperfections to the teams. Yeah. And maybe it is because you're dealing with kids that are, you know, 18 to 22 years old. The outcome of the game is more important to a college player than to an NFL player. More of their life is still wrapped up in the outcome of the game, kind of defines whom they are for more of the players. I mean, an NFL guy cares about a Super Bowl, certainly does, especially the ones that love the game, like a Peyton Manning or someone, right? It's his legacy. But there are plenty of guys playing on Indianapolis or Denver with Peyton Manning who have, you know, $40 or $50 million in the bank, and they're living the high life, and that's what defines them, not how good of a left guard they are.
Right.
And in the college game, certainly some of them are aspiring to play in the NFL, but the way they get there is by winning games and kicking ass on the field. So none of them have tons of money yet, you know, besides Cam Newton and
Reggie Bush.
Yeah, Reggie Bush, both in the six figures there.
That we know of.
But, yeah, besides those guys, even the ones that got paid outside of the boosters, you know, 10 grand or something, I mean, they're not millionaires. Yeah. So the outcome of the game is still just very important to them. I think it's that emotion that kind of leads to these epic matchups. But you're right, I mean, it only happens every so often.
Yeah, my favorite game is still that ridiculous Fiesta Bowl from a few years ago with it was OU and Boise State.
Yeah, absolutely.
That thing was like a goddamn movie.
Yeah, it was crazy.
I mean, they won on the Statue of Liberty play, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
That is a Disney ending.
That was a crazy game. Yeah. Carson was the offensive coordinator in that game.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Yeah.
A topic for another day, but I think that it's interesting. You probably haven't seen any Iowa games this year, but I was watching an Iowa game.
Yeah, why would you think that?
Terrible. And Iowa has no more talent on that team than, say, like a Lake Travis or a Westlake does on offense. But I was watching Greg Davis call the game at Iowa. He's the offensive coordinator, if you don't know that. And he wasn't calling that bad a game, actually. And I was thinking to myself, what is going on here? And I really, you have to come to grips with the fact that Mack Brown started as an offensive coordinator. And he was not a good offensive coordinator, but that's what his background is. And I think I've decided that the last years of offense at Texas just looks nothing like Boise State's offense. It looks more like Boise State's offense when we're playing terrible teams and nothing like Boise's offense when we're playing good teams. And I think you have to look inside yourself and say to yourself, actually, the common denominator here of all these crappy years of offense and bad play calling, even when we were winning, is that Mack Brown is involved in the game plan. Even though
I've heard this theory before, actually.
Yeah.
The idea that Brown and Davis actually were schematically at odds.
Yeah, absolutely. I just really think I've come to believe that this is true. And mostly because of what I see in Harsin's play calling against tough opponents. It doesn't look like his offense when we play tough opponents. It's not him. I mean, what we have is we have Mack Brown, who thinks he's Nick Saban of offense, and he's involved in the game plan, and he's terrible at it. Anyone can call plays when it's Vince Young back there because it works. Or Colton Chipley, you know,
playing pitch and catch.
Yeah, playing pitch and catch. It doesn't matter what you call. They break routes. They, you know, do whatever has to be done, and they make first downs. But we don't have any good offenses besides those two quarterbacks the entire time here.
Yeah.
There's a common denominator. I mean, most of it is Greg Davis, but you certainly know that Greg Davis didn't want to go to a power running game after he was a spread offense guy.
I still remember when Chris Sims was the scapegoat.
Yeah, yeah.
Because he refused to look at safeties. Except when throwing the ball to them, but...
it was certainly a limitation that was real.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
And but interestingly for him, of course, it wasn't necessarily bad coaching because he kept doing the same thing in the NFL.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He just never read defenses. It was pretty clear once you watched him play more than a couple games.
Yep.
Like wait. Oh, the quarterback can catch the ball. Oh, yes. I didn't know that.
Yep.
Yeah, but, I think he had a streak there his one year where he opened every game with a pick six. Like, literally.
I think it was three games in a row. It wasn't the first pass. Against Colorado in the first game of the streak, it was the first pass. And I think the other two times, it was just on the first drive.
Yeah, yeah. It was
three games on the first drive. But yeah,
that doesn't feel better.
That's pretty hard to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mad props.
Good spirals. Nice catchable balls.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe we shouldn't make fun. The man has no spleen now.
Yes. Yeah, it's an interesting thing. He was doing decently in the NFL. I mean, he certainly had talent.
Yeah. Just no head for the game, though.
No, absolutely. And it's just one of those things, right? I mean, he just didn't have the feel for what needed to be done. Hard worker, by all accounts, really hard worker at practice, studying game film. But, you know, I could study all the game film in the world, and if you threw me out in pads, I'd be a pansy ass thinking I was going to get killed. I could watch hundreds of hours of film, and Alex Okafor would make me shit my pants every play. That's the truth, right?
Oh, I don't want to meet him in public.
Yeah, if those guys were lined up across from me, I'd never make the right read. So, I feel you, Chris.
Yeah. Well, that feels like a strong ending. The Chris Sims Memorial Podcast.
Yep.
All right, man. It's been good talking to you.
Absolutely. Good to hear from you, Cyrus.
Yeah, man. How's the wife and kid?
They're doing okay. Kid's sick